This is James Corbett of CorbettReport.com, and today is the 30th of March 2011, and I'm talking with Helen Caldicott, a medical doctor and a co-founder of Physicians for Social Responsibility. She is a campaigner for nuclear disarmament and the author of such books as Nuclear Power is Not the Answer and If You Love This Planet, which is also the name of her weekly radio program broadcast on community stations across Australia. Her website is HelenCaldicott.com. Dr. Helen Caldicott, thank you for taking the time to talk with us today on The Corbett Report.
That's a pleasure.
Well, perhaps you can describe for the listeners how you became such a passionate speaker on nuclear issues and why the abolishment of nuclear power and nuclear weapons has been a major concern in your career.
Oh, well, when I was an adolescent, I read a book by an Australian called On the Beach. The author was Neville Shute. It was about a nuclear war that occurred by accident. Everyone in the Northern Hemisphere died, and the last remaining people on Earth were people in Melbourne, Australia, because it's so far south, and it describes how the radiation finally reached Melbourne and everyone died. It was a very simple book about simple people, but it just branded my soul, and I realized from then on my life was never safe. Then when I was 17, I entered first year medical school and learned about radiation and Muller's experiments on Drosophila fruit fly, and that if you radiate fruit fly, you can follow their genetic mutations through many generations. And I, at this stage, knew that Russia and America were testing nuclear weapons in the atmosphere. There was a hell of a lot of fallout. And for the life of me, as a young medical student, I couldn't understand what these men thought they were up to, which, you know, the fallout would cause genetic mutations for the rest of time, depending on how long the isotopes remained around, and many, many cases of cancer. So that's how I was first initiated into this dreadful problem.
Well, I understand that the incident at Three Mile Island was also a formative part of your career. Perhaps you can tell us about that and how it shaped the work that you do.
Well, it wasn't really a formative part. I had led the movement against the French tests in Australia in 1971-72 when the French came down to the South Pacific and started blowing their bombs up in the atmosphere, and we got a lot of fallout. I also had educated the uranium miners in Australia about the medical effects of radiation upon their testicles and their families and the whole thing. I had read a book by Goffman and Tamplin called Poisoned Power about nuclear power, and I had never read anything so dangerous in my life as that book medically. And so I came to Boston. Actually, I was a specialist in cystic fibrosis and worked at the Children's Hospital Medical Center at Harvard on the faculty for some years in the CF clinic, and I happened to be asked by the editor of the New England Journal to write an article about nuclear power, which I spent a year researching. And during that time, I also wrote a book at that time called Nuclear Madness. And at the time, a film team decided they wanted to do a documentary on me, and the documentary is called 8 Minutes to Midnight, and they followed me to Australia. And when I was in Australia talking about nuclear power and the like, Three Mile Island melted down. And I was so worried because my children were still in Boston, and indeed the radioactive cloud did reach up to Boston, and I was going to fly them out to California to my friends. And then as soon as I got back from Australia, I was invited to Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, where I addressed thousands of terrified citizens in the gymnasium in the high school about what it meant. What the accident and the meltdown at Three Mile Island meant. And since then, there's been a huge cover-up of the data about the health effects of that particular accident, which I now have recorded in my book, Nuclear Power is Not the Answer to Global Warming.
Well, what are some of those effects, and what types of things have been covered up since that incident took place?
Well, what happened was the radiation monitors went off scale in the first few minutes of the accident, so nobody knows how much radioactive material got out, but a fair bit did. And there are various estimates, which I've put in my book. Hershey's Chocolates is 15 miles from Three Mile Island, and there was so much radioactive iodine in the milk and the cows where they grazed, just near the power plant, that they powdered the milk for 6 weeks until the radioactive iodine decayed away. And then they used the milk and the chocolates, but lots and lots of other nasty, nasty elements got out, including almost certainly plutonium, which lasts 500,000 years and is terribly deadly, such that a millionth of a gram can cause cancer. Cesium-137, which lasts 600 years and causes brain cancer, muscle cancer, and the like. Strontium-90, which lasts 600 years and causes bone cancer and leukemia, and lots and lots of other things. Now, quite a few people developed erythema, redness of the face, and mouth ulcers, and they developed some hemorrhaging, and they almost certainly suffered from a really high dose of radiation, acute radiation illness. They didn't die, but they got a whopping dose. It was noted amongst the veterinarians that there was a cow born with two heads and all sorts of deformities amongst the animals and plants as well. There has been a high incidence of cancer recorded by some people in the area where the plume went, but they only recorded the cancer incidents till 1985. The accident was in 78, I believe. Now, it takes, you know, 2 to 60 years for cancer to develop post-radiation, so there was not an adequate epidemiological study ever done on that population. What's more, GPU, General Public Utilities, handed out $100,000 to people who died of various things, including heart attacks, which had absolutely no relationship to the accident, and with the promise that they would never speak about the accident again. So there's been a vast and huge cover-up. I got the data from the labs at Three Mile Island, at Hershey's Chocolates from the whistleblower, and published them in my book. So if you want to check that accident, you can. But then there was a much more profound accident at Chernobyl, and there's been a great and vast medical cover-up conspiracy. The International Atomic Energy Agency has a very strange relationship with the World Health Organization and an agreement that WHO can't publish anything, any health effects about, deleterious health effects about a nuclear accident unless the IAEA gives permission. Consequently, WHO has never looked at the medical implications of Chernobyl. However, the New York Academy of Sciences have just published a report called Chernobyl, which is very important. I mean, it's very important, where they translated 5,000 articles done by leading Russian scientists over 25 years. And the story is that almost 1 million people have already died from Chernobyl, 1 million. And yet the IAEA says only 35 or so died. So this is a criminal conspiracy, the likes of which we've never seen in the history of medicine before.
Well, then, from your research, what is the role of the IAEA and what is its relation to the nuclear power industry?
The IAEA, its role is to promote nuclear power all over the world, but incidentally, to prevent any country who gets a reactor to make a nuclear weapon. Now, each reactor makes 500 pounds of plutonium a year, and you only need 10 pounds to make yourself a bomb. So any country that has a reactor can make bombs, nuclear weapons. So the IAEA is a sort of push-me-pull-you animal. On the one hand, it's saying, you want a nice new nuclear reactor, and on the other hand, and it works for the nuclear industry, obviously, on the other hand, don't make any bombs, which is a crazy notion. Prevents the WHO from, you know, studying nuclear accidents. This is a UN, a United Nations body.
Well, obviously, all eyes around the world, and of course those here in Japan where I'm based right now, are looking at the Fukushima Daiichi plant in northeastern Japan that obviously was affected by the recent earthquake and tsunami, and we are witnessing the meltdown of reactors in that complex right now. What can you say about what we know and what we don't know about that situation right now, and what we might expect to see as medical fallout from this crisis?
What we don't know is a lot. I don't think TEPCO knows much either. I think It's like Governor Thornburg said when Three Mile Island happened, the governor of Pennsylvania, we're like a couple of blind men staggering around in the dark. And that is actually true for the TEPCO people. Literally and metaphorically, they had no power until just 2 days ago. So they were staggering around in the dark. Yesterday, there was a report in The Guardian that there has been a full meltdown at Reactor 2, that the fuel has melted through the pool of the container onto the concrete floor. And there could be a massive explosion, hydrogen, which, like Chernobyl, would release massive amounts of radiation. And if the wind's blowing towards the south, you know, that could contaminate forever much of Japan. If the wind's blowing towards the west, it will take this huge cloud of radiation, like Chernobyl, towards the North American continent, and the fallout will be rained down or snowed down when rain or snow precipitates. 40% of Europe is still radioactive in sort of hot spots, depending where it rained, and will remain so for hundreds of years. So that's the scenario we're looking at. We're looking at, I think, hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of cases of extra cancer and childhood deformities and genetic disease over future generations. This is horrific. Four of the reactors are still at risk. One seems to have melted down. Another one has had some meltdown, not a full one. The fuel pools are so full of long-lived radioactive material, and they have much more in them than in the reactor core themselves. They're at risk. Some of them have been burning. I don't know, figuratively, literally, where this is going to end up. I can't prognosticate as a physician and a pediatrician, but I am extremely, extremely worried.
What can you tell us about the history of the Tokyo Electric Power Company that runs the Fukushima Daiichi plant?
Well, only from what I've been reading lately in the news, that it is notoriously unreliable for telling the truth and covering up data that isn't appropriate, they think, for the normal public to hear, and not really following the safety rules and guidelines as they should. They've kind of saved face over the years, but more than that, have been covering up a lot of really dangerous information. So I wouldn't trust them. So I think there are three things going on. One, I don't think that TEPCO really knows what is going on. Two, they're saving face and kind of covering up, which the Japanese do. And three, they haven't a clue how to control this. And I think it's going to be an ongoing catastrophe for months, if not years, as the Japanese Prime Minister has already said. It's an absolute tragedy for Japan and the world.
So if you were being asked by the Japanese government to advise on what might be some possible medical steps that could be taken at this point, what would you be advising?
Well, it depends what happens. I mean, if there's a massive release of radiation, you can't protect people against that. Yes, you can give them potassium iodide tablets to block the uptake of radioactive iodine in the thyroid and prevent cases of thyroid cancer, but you can't prevent. There are 200 elements in that reactor, all of which are radioactive, some last seconds and some last millions of years. They all go to different organs in the body and produce different cancers in different places. There's no way you can protect people from eating radioactive food or breathing in radioactive air or radioactive elements getting through the skin into the body. You can't decontaminate people. I mean, the guidelines in America say you take them into the mortuary at the hospital and hose them down, but you can't get radioactive elements, the internal emitters, out of their bodies. And those internal emitters, strontium-90 in the bones, cesium-137 in the muscle, plutonium in the lung and the liver and the bone and the testicle and in the uterus affecting the fetus, they give very high doses to very small volumes of cells. And I see consistently people in Japan talking about a low-level radiation. This is not low level to the cells that are affected. And the people talking about this don't understand radiation biology, and they have no right to be talking about it.
Well, so it sounds like you're saying that the best possible thing that could happen is just for no more explosions to take place, and even then
yes,
it's still...
the accident to end, yes.
Yes, but even it's then it's still to... going to be a difficult
yes,
situation.
Yes, and the other scary thing is aftershocks. I mean, we had a terrible catastrophe in New Zealand in Christchurch, I don't know, 6 months ago, and then, for heaven's sake, it occurred again with another earthquake about 3 or 4 months later. So you absolutely can't predict when the earthquake's occurring. With these reactors and cooling pools in such a powerless state now, if there's another big aftershock, well, God knows what will happen, and I really mean that.
So I would assume that it would be your opinion that there's no such thing as a safe nuclear power plant.
Do I need to say that? It's self-evident.
All right. Well, for people who are interested in more information as this develops and more information about yourself, tell them about your website and what they can find there.
Yes. Yes, I have a website called nuclearfreeplanet.org, and there's a huge amount of information there, number one. Number two, I've got a weekly radio program called ifyouloveusplanet.org. Go there, and you can download all sorts of interviews with very, very well-established scientists and nuclear engineers and people who really understand this medically and environmentally and the like. My book, Nuclear Power is Not the Answer to Global Warming, is published by the New Press. If you go to my personal website, helencaldicott.com, you can get that book via Amazon. Read the book. And you'll know more than probably the Japanese Prime Minister. It's scary stuff, but it's medical. This is a medical emergency. It's a medical catastrophe.
All right. Well, on that very serious note, well, Dr. Helen Caldicott, thank you very much for taking the time to talk with us today.
Thank you.